Morning. It's good to see you here. Yesterday we had an all-day sit that started early in the morning and went until, 8 o'clock last night, something like that. And I see a few of you have come back for more. It feels like now more than ever we need to find the time and the space to be quiet. To find some kind of peace of mind. To cultivate our mind so that we can care and protect others. So we do that by sitting silently facing the wall. Also, we do that by working together in community to support each other's practice and appropriate action in the world. Sometimes I think that our study it's kind of arcane Zen tradition in a way. It can feel that our study is far away from the demands on us as citizens. It can even seem far away from the demands on us as ordinary living beings in our lives. So I like to quote the words of an ancient rabbi. I love to quote this. He was asked once, what was more important, what was greater, study or practice? And his answer was, study if it leads to practice. Yeah. So we come here and sit to be quiet so that we can go out and be strong. And we study our texts so that we can have some clarity when we're called on to protect others or ourselves. So I'm going to offer you a little Buddhist study today as a call to practice, to action. It's so important now for us to pay attention to what's going on in the world. And how we can serve, how we can make a difference. So at this time, those of you who have been following us through, we have these 90-day periods of intensified practice, and we're now in around the 60th day of the 90 days, and we always choose some kind of a text to study during the period, and this time we're studying the Jewel Mirror of Awareness. And although I made a bunch of copies yesterday, I see there's only one copy left out there for you to pick up. But if you go online to our website, you can download a copy of the Jewel Mirror of Awareness. So this is a verse very appropriate to the times. It was written in the 9th century in China. Although that time is kind of disputed. There are those that say, no, it was actually rewritten in the 11th century, but we don't have to go there. The point is the message that the text gives us. Its nominal author is Dongshan Liangjie, one of the founders of our sect of Buddhism, of Soto Zen. We used to say, it's dark to the mind, but light to the heart about these texts. Because it's just, what is he talking about? What is this, right? And that's because Zen, in effect, is always telling us, don't get caught up in the words. So it's always having these kind of a rhetoric that tries to destruct us before we try to create meaning and cling to the words. So it's always doing this, jamming up against our notions. And that's kind of like the hallmark of Zen. It's breaking up those notions we have about what this means, what this word means, so that we can intimately experience the feeling of what is being transmitted. So that's a kind of, and this particular text does that very often. And it's trying to show us that, you know, we're never going to get to this kind of absolute state that is talked about, because it's a collection of words. It's an image. It's like seeing a painting and saying, oh, that's what I want. You know, it's like, no, you're not in that painting. Your experience of God or your experience of enlightenment or your experience of intimacy is not going to be what you see on the painting or what you see in a sculpture or what you see in some words. So don't get hung up with it. And basically, that's what we're saying. So when we think of the rhetoric that's going on in our daily political lives that most of us are paying far more attention to than we have in many years, we have to also recognize that's also true and not be knee-jerking all the time, every time we get a tweet or a Facebook post or something on CNN or MSNBC or Fox News, you know, whatever it is that you look at. I've started looking at Fox News on my watch because I think it's important to know what's being said, even though I can only take as much as one screen load of it here, because then I begin to be reactive and need to count my breath. But I think the point I'm trying to make is that we have to be really careful not to get caught up the concepts of enlightenment and delusion, or left and right, progressive and conservative. Let's be very careful that we don't begin to demonize the other, because then we're no longer on the path. We need to protect and care for all sentient beings. To be aware of that is really a way to wake up. And so we might use some of our Zen techniques when we go into our political world view to what we're seeing. Let's just try to see what is the need that is being met. So we're talking about the jeweled mirror of awareness, and it gives us some strength in this area. It begins, the Dharma of thusness is intimately conveyed by Buddhas and ancestors. Now you have it. Keep it well. Now, what is it that we have that we don't think we have, most of us? Always searching. There's all these images in Zen about, you know, you're standing in the middle of the water saying, give me some water, give me some water. Now you have it. Keep it well. We sit zazen. You're here. You come to sit zazen. You regulate your breathing. Possibly you regulate your thinking. And then at some point it may be, as the song tells us, we recognize that this thusness, this just thisness, the juiciness of this moment, not some idea of this moment, but actually now, we have it. We have it. Keep it well. Further down it says, subtly included within the true inquiry and response come up together. Communing with the source and communing with the process, it includes integration and includes the road. So it's talking about this dharma of thusness that you already have, but sometimes you forget. I guess that's why we come here. Certainly why I come here, is to remember. To remember, to re-embody the dharma of thusness. It's not out there. Subtly included within the true, inquiry and response come up together. I'm saying the quality of the absolute nature of reality is included in just the natural questioning and study that we do. It's just what we do. Subtly included within the true, inquiry and response come up together. That's what we do here. Just asking the question brings the answer forth. And that's not that you're asking the teacher the question. Your being able to focalize the question allows you, opens you to answering the question. It is in the question. The answer is always in the question. And this word included is a character, all of this was originally in Chinese, so it was all in these ideograms. And that character is clasped under the arm. So included within, so close, so intimate, so physical. It's not included in some intellectual kind of cold way, but, right here. The absolute, right here. So within that absolute, we find the question and the answer, the inquiry and the response. The relationship between oneness and manyness. We sit here in this room. You can hear the sirens outside now. And the hail hitting the air conditioner. So there's that manyness, there's that quality. All the many things that are happening. The horns. All the things going on. Where is the oneness? Is it separate? Is it one, or is it two? Clasp it under the arm. So, in response to this, the next two lines say, communing with the source and communing with the process. It includes integration and includes the road. Communing with the source. How do we do that? Just breathing in, stopping for one microsecond in the midst of our busy lives, stopping, communing with the source, the oneness, the wholeness. It's being able to just drop all that kind of nervous energy going on inside us. Blah, 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 just for a sec. You don't leave your world. It's just for a second. That's what we learned to do on the cushion, but if we just sat on the cushion, well, what would that be? That would be weird, just to spend your life sitting on the cushion looking at a white wall. No, you go out into the world, but you've learned to do that. And when something comes up, you take the breath in. You're on the road. You're using it. Communing with what is outside of mind, communing with the source. And this character, this for that was translated by Cleary and many others as communing, is often translated as transmitting or connecting. But I like communing very much. It's from the Old French. And it means to share. So transmitting is a bit like one to two, but communing is it shows that interconnected quality. We commune with nature. We commune with our sense of oneness. Communing with the source and communing with the process. So we sit in samadhi, in the quiet. We're also sitting with the whole world, the joys and suffering of the world, and the mundane everyday tasks of our lives. Do you commune with the source when you make your bed? When you take your coffee? Whether you realize it or not, you are clasping under the arm the existence of everything in each moment. I love that our Zendo is so noisy. You know, for many years I didn't like that, of course, you know. But in the most important years of my own training and practice, I practiced in the mountains in Southern California, right above Palm Springs, actually, up in the mountains. You could climb to the top of the mountain and look down at the desert with my Azumi Roshi. So this would be like the perfect place out in the country, you know, in the forest. High desert forest. And we would sit in Zazen, and, you know, because of the imbalance of nature, there were like many, many stellar jays, which have the most raucous song that you can imagine in the world. And because of the imbalance of nature, there were many of them there. And so those 3 or 4 years that I stayed there, we're sitting there and you know, and the people back here in town thought that I was like in this, you know, heavenly place with this beautiful silence. So then you come back here and you think these sounds of Manhattan, you know, they're just beautiful songs. It's never the ideal. It's never the ideal. A great teaching. So that's what this teaching is about, communing with the source, the wholeness of everything, and the process, which is the life itself, the living, noisy reality of life in that case. Then it says, magnificent. No, then it says, it includes integration and includes the road. So when we integrate with the oneness, with the vastness of all of life, and all of non-life too. It directs us directly to the road, which of course is the way, is the path, is the process of our lives. It's the road we're on right now with the personal issues that we each have and the political dimensions that we're faced with. The demands on us to be wise, to be compassionate. And sometimes that's like not so, you know, it requires you to smile at someone in the elevator or someone you kind of know because of some business relationship or something, and then it's revealed that they're a Trump voter. For example. You're on the road. How do you meet someone else on the road? What is the process? It is our life, just as it is. So I think, you know, I keep talking about it because now we're all called to clasp under our arms something very important that's happening that could be of danger to people. We are part of this vast multidimensional world, and the world is still filled with joy. We can't forget that. There is joy. There is art. There is music. There's dancing. There's also danger. And we have a responsibility as bodhisattvas to protect those who are vulnerable and defend our view of what a compassionate community is. So I wanted to encourage you. I posted something like this on Facebook the other day because 200 years before the Common Era, CE, 200 years. So that was like about 150, or we don't know for sure when Shakyamuni Buddha was alive, but it was a couple hundred years after Shakyamuni Buddha. There was a ruler who governed most of the Indian subcontinent. And originally he was a fierce warrior who killed a lot of people. And then he had a kind of awareness of what he had done and wanted to do restitution, and he became a Buddhist. And his name was King Ashoka, or King Piyadesa was his name. There's a lot of stories about him. And for many, many years, I mean, many centuries, it was considered, you know, a fable, the story about Ashoka. And they would say, oh, you know, it was just a story. But then they found all of these big pillars with King Piyadesa's edicts on them, and there are 12 of them that have been translated. These giant stone pillars with these rules about how to have a beloved community on there. It's just amazing. And many governments have used these edicts as kind of guidelines, those in Asia and Southeast Asia. So, and one of the pillars is about religious tolerance. So I'm going to read some of it for you. Now, okay, so put your minds back to 200 before the Christian era, or before the Common Era. So it's a long time ago. And he wrote, it was written on this pillar, "Beloved of the gods, King Piyadesa honors both ascetics and the householders of all religions, and he honors them with gifts and honors of various kinds. But beloved of the gods, King Piyadesa does not value gifts and honors as much as he values this, that there should be growth in the essential of all religions. Growth in essentials can be done in different ways, but all of them have as their root restraint in speech. That is, not praising one's own religion or condemning the religion of others without good cause. And if there is cause for criticism, it should be done in a mild way. But it is better to honor other religions for this reason. By so doing, one's own religion benefits, and so do other religions, while doing otherwise harms one's own religion and the religions of others. Whoever praises his own religion due to excessive devotion and condemns others with the thought, "Let me glorify my own religion," only harms his own religion. Therefore, contact between religions is good. One should listen to and respect the doctrines professed by others. Beloved of the gods, King Piyadasi desires that all should be well learned in the good doctrines of other religions. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? We don't think of that. We don't think of those times. The other thing that's amazing to me, you know, is because one time I was something of a scholar of communications, is, you know, the difference between something that has been carved in stone. What I just read to you is long. It was carved on a pillar in stone. It isn't a tweet. You know, I mean, our media nowadays, you can say anything, anytime. It's just amazing. This was carved. Is that something chirping?
Burned.
Oh, it's probably just someone's cell phone. Yeah, don't worry about it. Speaking of that sound, for a moment I thought maybe it was the a smoke detector. And I just read this really great thing. That they're going to make smoke detectors that you can yell at it, "I'm just cooking!" Isn't that great? Have we all been there? So I thought this was really good to realize that this idea of having respect for other religions isn't a European idea. It isn't an American idea. It's just common sense. What would it be like for people of Hindu and Islam and Christian and Jewish and Muslim, all these different traditions, to practice side by side, appreciating one another's practice? We have that in cosmopolitan cities like this, where we have an interfaith center that does that kind of work all the time. But it really shows that this is an old, important value that is being threatened now in this country, and we need to pay attention to that. Huh? We know that autocrats use fear and hatred. I mean, it's not even that they believe that there's a threat. We have to really pay attention to what we can do, how we can step up and speak out. I've certainly been part of different faith communities, and I must say the Christians seem to be the ones that be doing the most work now with the different kinds of petitions and so forth to the government. But I've been part of various spiritual groups that are standing up and speaking up for to stop the confusing of people, confusing what's happening in this country. Communing with the source and communing with the process, it includes integration and it includes the road. We have to clasp that under our arms, because the road is here right now And the last time we faced this kind of horror was, during the civil rights time in this country. So I'm just going to read you something really short that Dr. Martin Luther King wrote in his famous letter from the Birmingham jail. You may be aware of that. "I have almost reached the regrettable conclusion that the Negro's great stumbling block in the stride toward freedom is not the white citizen's counselor or the Ku Klux Klanner, but the white moderate, who is more devoted to order than to justice, who prefers a negative peace, which is the absence of tension, to a positive peace, which is the presence of justice. Lukewarm acceptance is much more bewildering than outright rejection." So I think there's a wave now of understanding, of people finally hearing the words of Dr. King, that it's important to speak up and not pay attention to order. And I'm sure you've seen that if you're reading the papers or paying attention to what's happening in our country. We need to join a small resistance group. No question about that. Find something that is in alignment with your values. But we have to do something. We can't just say, oh, that's really a good idea. We're really being called to action. We're being called to action by this 9th century text, and we're being called to action by current events. We're on the road. This is the process. It's not separate from that ideal idea we have of wholeness, of awareness, of enlightenment. We need to act. So that's why you need to come here and sit zazen to get your strength from the samadhi that you gain so that you can work and take care of others. Thank you.